Diavagus Kilfall Troivistock, welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that's all about staying at home. My name's Conor Muinichon and this is episode 5 for Friday, April 17th, 2020. Last week we played with some free backgrounds made available by DC Comics. Today it's the turn of Marvel Comics. They've shared some images from their films as well as from comics, and you can find out more about this and other free stuff over at Michele's site. We've mentioned it before, irishfree.com. My guest today is radio and television producer Pat O'Mahony. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Con, how you doing?
I'm great,
I'm
Pat.
Intrigued to find out what background you use, because as we're recording this, all I can see is a green screen.
Yes.
So when it's when you're finished in the edit suite, I hope to see Batman or Superman or something flying through the background.
Yeah, wrong franchise. That's the thing, Pat, you see.
I'm not a comic fan.
Yeah,
I don't
no, me
know.
Neither. Well, I used to be. When I was 6, maybe,
okay.
Or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly.
With all due respect.
Before
and my kids
computers were invented.
And I've heard so many good things about the Marvel films and all of this. And I know colleagues of mine at Black Knight are going to scoff with scorn at my comic illiteracy. But there you go. Look, when I say my young fella,
he's 29, he'd know. This would be his thing, but I haven't a clue.
Yeah. So it's let me see if I've got this. Yeah, no, it's Avengers related stuff. It's Iron Man and all that kind of stuff. That's
what we're
displaying today.
Yeah, whatever.
But anyway, there you go.
Whatever.
Pat,
whatever.
How are you?
I'm good now.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm good now.
Did you or did you not have coronavirus?
I will only know that for sure if and when I take a blood antibody test. I about 3 weeks ago, a little over 3 weeks ago, I began to feel awful. And that was a Wednesday. The following morning, I rang my doc. Doc said, "Oh yeah, sounds like you probably have it. Go into self-isolation for 2 weeks." A week later, I began to feel fine. I thought, oh, hey, okay, whatever. And whatever I had wasn't a cold and it wasn't the flu. I know when I have the flu, one of the real, apart from all the symptoms, I personally can't drink tea or coffee when I have the flu. It's the only time ever I drink fruit tea. Whatever it does to my taste buds. So I was still drinking tea and coffee, had a healthy appetite. So, after about a week, I began to feel fine. And then a couple of days later, it hit me again. And I was like, oh, God. And it was just really taking it out of me. I felt nauseous. I felt sore all over, fever, etc. And, of course, I was following the news. And I was following different discussion programs about coronavirus. So I was well aware that, and following online discussion. So I was well aware that the 7 day feeling good, 10 or 11 day not feeling so good again thing was actually quite common with it. So I rang my doc, and this time she said, yes, okay, you can now get a test. Because when I rang originally, the criteria for being tested has changed a few times over the course of this, understandably. When they started, they were testing everyone. Then they said, no, we have a limited number of tests. So they kept it to those who were in the front line dealing with people who were sick and who had certain symptoms. Then they expanded it slightly and I qualified under that a week later. So by the time I had my test, I had been in isolation for about 2 weeks. Went down to Sir John Rogerson's Quay in Dublin. Very efficient, very well impressed with how they did it. So the test was done, and I wasn't expecting to hear, because I was reading stories of 10 days, 2 weeks, people not getting their test results. But in the meantime, of course, they had taken on a German lab to help them with testing, and they had more of the agent they needed for the actual results in the test that they'd got their hands on. So between the jigs and the reels, I was very surprised that 4 days later, I got a call telling me I was negative. Well, I was surprised I got the call so quickly, but I was really surprised when they told me I was negative. And they said, yes, no coronavirus was detected in your swab. So the next day I rang the doc to let them know, rang the clinic. She rang me back and she said, I have your test results in front of me. It doesn't say negative. It says undetected. And that's a very important difference. I suppose it's the difference between not guilty and innocent in a court case. Not guilty may mean you're innocent, but it doesn't always. Sometimes it just means they don't have the proof to convict you. So she's convinced from the symptoms I had that I had it. She said you did the test after 2 weeks, by which time the virus, the quantity of virus in your body would have decreased anyway. And also, it's a very tricky test to do. They have to swab the back of your neck on both sides here. So they have to go in through your mouth and then the back of your nose. So they have to go up your nostril. It's very unpleasant. In the same way, I suppose, as, you know, giving blood, you know, that initial prick of, you know, it's not something you volunteer to do very often, to go through pain. It's not that bad. So who knows? As far as she's concerned, I had it. I think I had it. Of course, if I didn't have it, that means I definitely don't have any immunity going forward. But if I did have it, there is a possibility I had immunity. Even that, they're not 100% certain yet. And I heard someone on Morning Ireland the other morning saying that if you had a low-level version of it, you may only have low-level immunity. So one way or the other, whatever, I just at this stage want to know. But I'm back in the land of the living. I've been out strolling around the neighbourhood again, doing my social distancing. I've been able to do my own shopping again, which is great. I have a lot of friends in the area who are able to keep me supplied. They drop stuff at the gate and run and not take any cash in case it was infected. So I owe them money now. So, yes, I'm back in the land of the living, feeling human again, and it's great.
I suppose, Pat, that your experience really highlights the amount of uncertainty that is around this for doctors, for scientists, for policymakers. It's a fairly stark reminder, I think, that we don't know a lot about, when they say it's a novel virus, we don't know a lot about it, about how long it's transmitted, how long it lasts, whether or not you develop immunity after having it, or to what extent you develop that immunity. It's really a reminder, I suppose, and a warning to us all that we don't have all the answers about this.
No. I think at this stage they're not even sure what all the questions are. There's that whole... It is, as you say, it's a novel virus. It's new. So they're making decisions on the best available information. And the best available information isn't always the correct information, or it's not always the full picture. Yes. So I don't envy them that one. Personally, I'm very impressed with what we've done here and how we've tackled it. Of course, the lockdown has... as any scientist will tell you, you know, there's the whole theory of unintended consequences. I think they knew it was going to kill the economy, but there's lots of other things. There's health and fitness, there's domestic abuse issues that have come with it. There's increase in home baking, home cooking. I heard this morning the statistics on domestic electricity usage, and it's decreased enormously in the morning because people are staying in bed that they have nothing to get up for. So yes, it's like I've written a bit in the blog about the media and the coronavirus impact and how they've changed their work practices, how they've had to, and going, you know, long term, whether any of these changes might become standard practice as people get used to them and realize, you
we
know,
should probably
actually,
explain to people, Pat, what it is that you usually and normally do. Some people may know you from television. I think that you still work, I think, in television, but more in radio.
Occasionally, I haven't
done.
Yeah, I have. Like, I started out. I got my first break into broadcasting full-time in 1989, and that was in television. And then I did that for about 5 years, and then I began to do more and more radio. I had been doing some radio while I was there. I began to do a lot more radio. I was doing all radio when I left for London in 98. I spent 11 years in London and did mostly television in London, mostly television production.
And you're a freelancer now, Pat. Would that be a correct description?
I've always been a freelancer.
Yeah.
I've always been a freelancer. No one has ever offered me a full-time pensionable job. Mm-hmm. I've never chased one either.
Mm. So you would be someone who gets a call from, let's say, RT Radio or from a production company and says, you know, we need someone to do X, Y, or Z.
Hitler would be proud of the kind of pincer movement approach that any good freelancer takes. Mm. You come up with ideas, you pitch those, most of them fall by the wayside. But if one gets through, it's your idea, so they're kind of stuck with you. So you get a gig out of that. And then on the other hand, you're going, here's my CV, there's my website, this is what I've done. If you need someone for a gig you're already doing, or if someone goes sick, or if someone's on holidays or whatever, give me a call. So I'm thinking, come at it from both angles.
I'm thinking that it gives you a kind of an interesting insight, maybe turning up in lots of different roles in locum situations and that kind of thing.
Mm.
And in particular, what you were blogging about, I think, was that you had quite an insight, I think, into how the media and the broadcast media in Ireland in particular is adapting to this new reality that we live with. We've seen presenters presenting TV and radio shows from home. And things like that. There's a lot of new technology that has been hurriedly pressed into service.
Yes. Well, the thing is that actually I have been like you. I've been mostly watching it from outside, in that the last gig I did with Radio 1, I produced on Liveline for a few days early in March. And back then, they were... On my second last or last day, you know, sanitary wipes came round to clean computer keyboards, screens, telephones, the desk, and the innocence of it all now, you know. But the radio building was full. People were there. But I had a chat at one stage while I was in with one of the guys over in 2FM, and they were planning for presenters working from home. And I was wondering whether they were going to do that over ISDN lines, which are telephone lines, high quality telephone lines that you and I know about from, you know, you'll get people have them in their own home.
And it's
John
funny,
Peel for it. Do you remember John Peel on BBC Radio 1? He stopped going to London. He did his show for the last, I don't know how many years, from his front room or back room or wherever in Oxford, I believe, and down an ISDN line. But they're not reliable. There's now more reliable, better internet.
Here's the thing.
Technology.
Because it's a dedicated channel, Pat, I think broadcasters have clung to ISDN for far longer than other kind of organisations. And it's been funny for me because I would have an insight into how the broadcast world works, but also I work in a technology company in Black Knight. And when I mentioned to them that, radio stations use ISDN, people just laugh when they hear that because it really is 20-year-old technology and more from the point of view of the internet industry.
It wasn't what 2FM were now using. They now have these. In fact, it's very funny. I've no idea what they were called.
Mm-hmm.
They were mentioned to me. I went, "What are they?" And they said, "Well, they're over the internet and they're better quality, more reliable." And lo and behold, one morning, Brian Dobson tweeted a picture of his home setup, studio setup, and there was the little box that they had been talking about. So they're all using it. But my insight hasn't been from inside because I haven't worked on anything since the virus hit, because no sooner had it really hit than I got sick myself. I had emailed, it's very funny, I'd emailed all my contacts in radio and television, said, "Guys, I'm available if you need me, you know, because I know how mad this whole thing is." And the next day I was self-isolating. So only yesterday I emailed them again going, "Actually, I'm available
back
again. I did get it. So I can't promise you immunity, but I'm back." But I've just been observing it from the outside. And what has intrigued me as much as the actual changes, the broadcasters working from their home, producers going out with far less, sorry, teams going out to shoot, reporters and a camera, going out with far less equipment because they can now send stuff back over the internet, and they don't need to bring a big truckload with them for most things. And also, you know, newsrooms half empty as people are socially distancing and more people working from home. And I'm really interested as well in the effect that will have long term. Will a lot of broadcasters go, oh, I don't need to travel all the way in to work, I can be at home? Will media organization owners go, why am I paying big rent for this city center office space? I could get it smaller and I'd have less utilities to pay for if they worked from home, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also going to be hugely negative impacts. Mm. You know, we've already had local newspapers closing down. They may never open again. We have people being laid off, taking pay cuts, being enforced rather than taking them. Mm. So, it's interesting times. I think the media landscape will be very different when we come back out of this.
There's no question about that, Pat. One thing that's interesting as well, I suppose, is that we're in a situation really where national unity is called for. And there's been a lot of, I think the media have quite rightly seen that they have a civic duty to get the government messages across, to get the expert advice across, to advise people on what to do. Do you think there's any danger, Pat, that in the face of all this, when we're dealing with a national crisis, when unity is obviously desired in many ways, that we would lose maybe the critical element and the element by which we normally expect the media to hold the authorities to account?
And it's funny you say that, because in the blog post, it's called Off Message, by the way. You know it. You'll find it at patomahony.ie.
Plug your website there, Pat.
It's patomahony.ie /off-message will get you the media curious blog posts and podcasts. In fact, I'm doing a new podcast next week with someone at the cutting edge who has been involved in making all these changes that we're now talking about in broadcasting, national broadcasting. So that should be up next week. But one of the things I said was it was interesting to watch the media, by and large, to an almost 100% degree, weigh in behind the government PR line that this is what we need to do. In fact, I remember George Lee in one broadcast for RTE saying, everyone should stay apart. It's for the best. It's good, you know. And then he said, so said the minister for whatever. But it sounded like a party political broadcast when he started. And I went, slow down there, George. But everyone has. And there's a little red flag has gone up for me, apart from, because I think the questioning has been, you know, they are critical and they do want to get the facts right. And they're saying, could you have done better? And they're constantly doing that, which is right. But it just shows you how, for the right circumstances now, the media can become the government's PR machine. Mm. In less benign times, think of the effect such an approach could have. You know, the media in 1940s Germany were four square behind Hitler. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a little red flag, small one.
A very small one, in fairness, Pat, but I do see where you're coming from.
Yes, tiny, yes.
And yeah. And I think no one would dispute that, that obviously a certain amount of unity is called for and appreciated as well.
Sure.
Pat, it's been great talking.
No, that's understandable.
To you, and I'm delighted to see that you're on the mend. It's not a pleasant experience, having COVID-19.
The only other thing that's happened is I used Airbnb, the spare room here. That's fallen off a cliff too.
Yes, and that's
so,
another story.
You know, that in itself is, you know, as you say, that is another story. Mm. But yes, it's and anyone who tells you they know what's going to come out the other end of this, will we be a better society, will be a worse society, will we just be as unequal as we are now, just in a different way, is either a liar, demented, or a fool, or some combination of all three, because no one knows where it's going to go. But it's fascinating to watch.
It certainly is. Pat, we're going to leave it there. And I want to say to you, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. Good to hear you're feeling better. And stay at home, as we're all doing. Mind yourself.
Stay safe and stay well.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Colin.
That's Pat O'Mahony, our guest on the podcast today. Next week, we'll be back three times a week. Next week, we're going to be back on Monday talking about gardening, and we'll tell you more about that then. Also want to plug a few websites that we have spotted recently. This one came to my attention. It's an initiative of Cork Institute of Technology, Crawford College of Art and Design, and it's a website called creativitytonic.ie. We'll put the URL up on the screen there in the video version of the podcast, and you can also find it, the link in the notes, at thelockin.ie. Related to that, and this is where I found it, socialdistancingfestival.com. Again, it's an example of how artists, musicians, creative people are making content available, and we are, to a great extent, I think, relying on art and music and culture to get us through some of the more difficult elements of this lockdown. And finally, Pat alluded to this as well during our interview there as well, and you've probably heard the ads on the radio relating to this. Stillhere.ie is, I think, a very important website, highlighting the fact that social services, Gardaí, and supports for people who may be suffering from domestic abuse or other difficulties, those services are still available. And even though social distancing and self-isolation and staying at home can make people more vulnerable, the supports and services are still available. So please see that as well, stillhere.ie. That's it from the Lock-In Podcast. Have a good weekend. We'll be back on Monday, as I said, to talk about gardening. Good evening. Wemshe, Colm Muinichon, Slán agus Beannacht.